I'm happy to keep it short.
Every time we say it's going to be a short episode, you know what happens, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 477 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Foz is out. He was going to join us, and then life, so.
Work, man. I tell you what.
Yeah, I don't know.
The birds.
It's for the birds. I wish.
I'm not kind of really sure what that phrase means, but it sounds like birds are much better paid than I am.
I think they're all retired. I don't know. They all have great 401ks. Whatever. Anyway, Boeing. There's a set of people, Boeing leadership specifically, there's a set of people who have some great benefits.
I mean, until as long as you can keep them, I guess.
It's been a big change. It's been a big week of change.
Yeah, this happened early last week, but after we'd recorded. So the CEO, Calhoun, is leaving. He's going to ride out the rest of this year while they search for a new overall CEO. Larry Kellner, formerly of Continental and currently chairman of the board, is leaving that role. He will not run for re-election on the board at the annual meeting coming up in the next couple months. And then I'm blanking on the guy's name, who was in charge of commercial aviation, left effective immediately to be replaced by Stephanie Pope. And my comments on that are manifold, but start with me. The short version is about time someone figured out the leadership is still terrible. But also, I have concerns about keeping basically sort of a more of the same approach to management, right? Like, you're taking another finance person and making them CEO of Boeing Commercial Airplanes, and it's a finance person who's been in-house for many, many years. So I don't know. It feels like a little bit more of the same. Maybe the new overall CEO will be different, but it seems unlikely. We don't, you know, who's going to be a chairman of the board now? Who knows? But, and also perhaps a terrible analogy, but they're a giant ship underway, and it takes a long time to steer those or stop them and change direction, as the bridge in Baltimore can attest. And so, probably shouldn't have done that, right?
That was terrible. Anyway,
I'd rather figure it out, but it didn't happen.
Anyway, so, a couple of things. Yeah. Let's take a step back. Okay. So, Stan Deal.
That's the one.
Is the CEO of head of commercial aircraft? Yeah, was, and he's retiring, immediate retiring.
Yes,
which is a nice way of saying self fired. I don't know. And then Larry Kellner, which I forgot. Larry Kellner, former CEO of Continental, was the head of the board.
Yeah.
And he's going to be succeeded by one of the directors, Steve Mullenkopf. So I guess he takes over as board chair.
I do have that one named.
And why does that matter? I guess is the question. Why does the head of the board matter in this?
Because the board ultimately, right? Arguably, the board sets the broader direction, and the CEO makes sure that on a day-to-day basis, the company is moving there, right? So, the part where the board sort of, and the board approves the CEO.
Yep.
So, or appoints or approves, whatever. So, like, the fact that the board sort of stayed internal last time they had to replace the CEO after the Max fatalities was already something of a tell, right? Like, they picked a guy who'd been there and helped oversee all of the problems with that program and trying to play off the whole, oops, we designed this plane badly and it killed people. And let that guy be CEO, which is Calhoun, right? Like, so it's, there's a lot of reasons to think that the board need, you know, and a part of that is how many independent directors do you have versus in-house and all these other things. But at the end of the day, the board decides a lot of what's going to happen in general direction for the company. So.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be real interesting to see, you know, the whole, like, try to get back to having engineers in charge thing, clearly not happening here. Maybe never can or never will. I don't know. But that idea is certainly not happening with what we've seen announced so far. So,
yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens with just what they're going to do. I mean, they're going to have to comply with what the FAA has put in place regardless, right?
Yeah, well, right. And so that's the other part is, like, there was some discussion. Obviously, they're still underperforming on aircraft manufacturing.
Yep.
And we've got a couple different bits about that. We can sort of transition into that. But part of it is that, and, you know, there's a lot of airlines that are starting to now realize this isn't going to end quickly. There's still discussion of whether they're going to buy out Spirit AeroSystems so that they can get back control of fuselage manufacturing. The one thing they've announced is they're going to try to stop traveled work, which is sort of at each station along the assembly line, the final assembly line in Renton or in South Carolina. They have a certain set of tasks that are supposed to be completed successfully. And if in some cases, if they don't get completed successfully, those open tasks move, travel with the plane to the next station on the line. They sort of roll with it. And the theory there is you don't stop the whole line. So, you know, once you fix that one little thing that was being annoying, you catch back up. The reality was much more of a problems continued to travel. It wasn't like a one-off occasional thing. And it was a symptom of the terrible, or a, I guess a symptom, indicator of the terrible quality program they were in the midst of.
So, I mean, they were kind of, it wasn't they were ignoring the issues. They were just kind of like putting them along. Like they were moving them further down the line to make sure.
And it's, right, if you do too much of that, then the next thing that has to get, you know, installed over it gets pushed. And so that's part of the problem. And part of the problem is just like, you assume the assembly line works based on certain sets of tasks being completed at certain times in a certain amount of time at a certain time. And if it consistently is not happening that way, it's traveled work, but it's also a significant sort of real world problem.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of that other stuff that's going on.
So
United, this impacts United specifically, or I guess most critically.
Well, I don't know about most, but it's certainly the one we've seen this week, some data on. United is having its own troubles anyways, and maybe that's a little too harsh, but has certainly seen some additional attention based on some mechanical issues and some other things going on in the last couple of weeks, which we'll get to in a sec. But Boeing is now, or United has now come out and said that it only expects to receive 152 of the 318 planes it has under contract for 2024 and 2025. So the vast majority of the shortcoming being Boeing's, Max's.
Less than half.
That's bad.
Yeah. And a lot of them were Max aircraft, I think.
Yeah. Most of them, the shortcoming is Max in, and a huge chunk of them was the Max 10s, which still doesn't exist as a certified aircraft. So that's a problem.
And United was looking at transatlantics potentially with that, and definitely transcops. Right?
Just transcops, I think. I don't think that 10 was going transatlantic.
Okay. All right. Maybe I missed it.
And they pushed some 8s into some marginal transatlantic routes over the last couple of summers. But
yeah.
Maybe not marginal. Much more leisure focused, much less business class. So the 10s, though, right? Like the whole point of that is part of it was the transcon stuff, which they want to replace the 752s eventually. And with the flatbeds, and part of it was just needing to get more capacity into critical congested hub markets, San Francisco and Newark being the main two, and not having a bigger plane available.
Yeah.
Not good.
And on top of this, I think today CNBC was writing, I mean, kind of late breaking news, but I want to make sure we talk about it. United is actually asking pilots to take unpaid time off because of the delays.
Yeah.
So May and potentially through the summer is when they're asking for these pilots to do that.
Yeah, so that's part of the, they don't have enough airplanes for these pilots to fly. They hired up assuming the planes would show up, and now with Boeing, both the certification of the 10 not happening, and then, you know, even if you guys had final take 8s and 9s, Boeing can't ramp up production of those to the levels that are needed to produce enough airplanes to get to everybody.
Yep.
And United is taking part of that hit. So the fact that it's got to be unpaid leave is really bad.
Yeah, I think it's a bad look for United. It's a bad look for Boeing. It's just all around not great. So,
yeah.
But on the flip side, United's doing something interesting with their E175s.
Yeah, so 50 of the SkyWest birds are getting larger overhead bins. They're saying like 80% more bags in the cabin. They expect to be able to not have to gate check anything anymore.
Hmm.
This includes a 22-inch roller board.
Wow. They've always had bigger bins on the E-175s than any other regional jets. So you've always been able to put a 20-inch roller board in there, I think.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, it's good news. I like it.
And to me, one of the big interesting things is the company that made the new bins is the same company that made the CRJ-550 interior.
Oh, okay.
So having demonstrated the fact that they could do this stuff, the United went back to them and picked the bins. Another interesting-ish thing about it is the a passenger is considered 195 pounds,
mm-hmm.
just on average, on board, including their carry-on bag.
Yep.
And which, now that I think about it, is underweighing me. Cool. I'm on the overside of that average. But when that bag gets moved to the bins, it's 35 pounds, I guess. Or excuse me, not to the bins, to the hold. Mm-hmm. If you gate check it, it's an extra 35 pounds on board. And so there's some talk about the impact on fuel efficiency, fuel carried, and range. And so, A, United operates some long 175 routes that potentially could become weight restricted if there's too much weight in the hold, because then you have to offload passengers or offload fuel.
Yeah. This seems like an accounting problem, though.
It is. Like, right? Like, the plane weight didn't actually change, but we have to pretend it did.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. The other part of it, though, is even without that, even if you don't offload someone, if your math says the plane, you check 10 bags and now your math says the plane is 350 pounds heavier, you may have to change the amount of fuel you're carrying based on the range expected and whatever else. And so now you're flying and you don't actually burn it because the plane isn't actually heavier, but you have to have that extra fuel on board. And now you're carrying extra fuel and you're burning fuel to carry that fuel. So there's a marginal fuel efficiency argument to be made for having the actual numbers be better and having the bags stay in the cabin helps that.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. I get it. This is a weird accounting problem that we should probably fix at the root cause.
Yeah. You're never going to be able to weigh every passenger. So
no, I mean, we could. That's probably the second project.
Really, you can.
please enter your weight and your bag's weight before boarding the plane.
Bag weight, usually you can get picked up on the system out front, but if they do it, some airlines do. I feel like it's in Europe, it's more commonly the actual weight's loaded, but because they come on the automated machine to like weigh it,
yeah,
and then it goes back one station and the attendant tags it, and then it goes back to the machines, whatever.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to touch about real quick on United and the FAA was there was some talk, I guess, over the last couple of weeks with those maintenance issues I alluded to earlier about how the FAA is taking a closer look at United, and they've announced that they are doing a sort of a quote-unquote regular audit of sorts, and just happens to conveniently be timed to when there've been some high-profile maintenance incidents. And that's aligned with a request to renew the authority to certify their own pilots.
Okay.
And there were some questions floating around as to what all this means, and could United be denied the opportunity to launch some long-haul routes where government authority is required or various other things. I'm pretty sure that isn't happening. The
idea behind this is that like United has a set of simulators and they certify their pilots on a type, right? And
right,
that's good with the FAA.
And the simulators isn't the problem. It's after you do your simulator, you have to do a real world for new pilots. They do a real world flight.
Yep.
And the official rule is the FAA certifies all those pilots. The FAA is the Czech airman.
Yep.
And long ago delegated that responsibility to airlines and does not have a sufficient staff to manage doing it itself anymore, much like aircraft manufacturing inspections.
Yeah.
And so if the FAA wanted to resume doing that directly because it didn't trust United, it has nowhere near enough bodies to do so and would be such a massive mess that I cannot imagine it would actually try to do that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that makes
sense. For the wrong reasons, but...
I bet the other airlines do this too, right? Like, I'm sure
everybody does it.
Yeah, Delta, Southwest, American, they all do it. Yeah.
Everybody does it. And it's one of those things. Sometimes it's a 3 month, takes 2 months, sometimes it takes, 3 months, but it's sort of a rubber stamp. And so
can you imagine though, like the complexity or the cluster it would be if the FAA had to do all these rides it would take forever.
Or they have to staff up and have a ton of people.
Yeah, but you got to find qualified pilots then that can do it.
And want to just work for the FAA, not for
an airline. Yeah, and then you're just constantly doing check rides? That's miserable.
Yeah.
What did you do today? Check ride. Another check ride.
One last FAA thing. No more wingwalking flights out of, I think this was in Washington, in Southern California. They got moved seasonally.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Sequium was the name of the company, and I don't know how this was allowed to happen, as long as it did, but apparently you used to be able to strap in on top of a biplane and, fly on the outside, and that is no longer allowed. So scratch that off your bucket list.
Yeah, it's funny because back in, I think, August of last year, the FAA inspector actually apparently told him that it was all clear. He could do it when he started doing this back in 2012. He was like, oh, yeah, you're all good. And then they've changed their mind. I can't imagine why this was a thing. Anyway,
yeah,
it's hey, you're climb up unharnessed and then harness yourself in while we're flying, at 5,000 feet. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Breeze. And
yeah, they had a lot of news last week. Too much, in my opinion. I feel like they should spread some of that stuff out. A lot going on. So, first up, they announced their first NDC distribution, third-party distribution channel. So they are now selling on Priceline. You get access to sort of direct inventory and such, and it's using NDC, new distribution capability. It's sort of the new way of airlines making content and pricing and everything available to third parties rather than using the old GDS platforms.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Obviously, it's good for the company that they now have a proper direct channel. There aren't a ton of people that start a search through an OTA as opposed to either an airline or a meta search engine. But if for the people that are starting straight at Priceline, this will certainly make a number of routes that where Breeze operates become more visible. It's very basic right now. Eventually, they plan to be able to sell. The release says that eventually they plan to sell the bundles and a lot of the ancillary stuff as well. What I found interesting is when I did my first couple searches, it would show me a coach ticket only, not a business class or first class. But if you clicked through, it would give you the option if you want the nicer or the nicest bundle. Mm-hmm. And nicest is their bundle that includes the Ascent business class. It even says this is business class, but if you search for business class, it wouldn't show it. So
a few little bugs with the
kinks to work out there, but it's coming along. And obviously, you know, the good news there is better distribution for the company should help sell more tickets. So
question then, like you said, a lot of people use meta search engines, right? So Google mm-hmm. Flights or whatever.
Right.
Does this, because it's on Priceline now, does this expose the fares to Google Flights?
So Google Flights already had Breeze on it.
Because they were using the website, whatever.
I don't know what the data link was, but they had something.
Yeah.
Where this gets interesting is I think Google Flights right now, if you search, my recollection was there were the only options for click-through was either direct or some sketchy OTAs.
Gotcha. Okay. Go to Gate or whatever.
Worse than that. And so what this should do is make Priceline a clickable option.
Okay.
And I'm pulling it up now to see what shows when I search. So, yeah, Google Flights has it. When I select the flight, Book with Breeze, AirPass, Trip.com, Kiwi, Cheapo Air, and Lucky to Go. So of those, I've heard of two of the three of the five.
Yeah, I mean, this starts a different conversation. Like, don't you think it's a little, like, shouldn't Google do a bit more here to kind of protect people and not send them to shady, you know, third parties?
Yes, with the caveat that calling them shady might not be very nice, but
let's not mince words though. Like some of this stuff is downright, like, yeah. Some of it is scammy. I mean, it's
some of it is scammy. We, you know, Ryanair has been real big about calling out some of this, like, oh, you can buy from, you know, you get these third parties that resell our stuff and then basically fake the pricing on all the ancillaries and charge even more than Ryanair does to sell bags or whatever, seat assignments, and somehow makes the technology work.
Yeah,
but Ryanair's had lawsuits other than that front before.
It definitely seems like, to your point about the nicest class or whatever,
yeah,
Ascent, it definitely seems like it's a bug somewhere in the integration, because even Google Flights won't, if you search first class or business,
won't show it.
It won't show it. And but if you search coach, it will show it as an option as part
right.
of booking flow.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a bug somewhere in their integration.
Yeah, it may just be how they file the fare or something like that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it'll be good overall. I think the NDC stuff is arguably of these three things, the smartest and well, one of the two is the smartest and one of the two good, reasonable things that has to happen.
Yeah.
As a company to do, you know, grow and whatever, yeah. Maybe try to make some money eventually. So that's one thing. The second thing is they launched a credit card.
Just what the world needs.
Another co-branded credit card. It's with Barclays.
Okay.
And it's not terrible, I think, is the best I can come up with. They did one very, very interesting thing, in my opinion, which is there's a... they did two interesting things. One is the annual anniversary bonus
mm-hmm.
is limited only if you've spent $10,000 on the year prior.
Hmm.
So instead of just pay your annual fee, get your bonus, you have to have actually spent $10,000 on the card. So that's one interesting thing about it. And I don't know. I'm trying to see if, yeah. And the annual bonus is 7,500 bonus points, which is basically $75 in value. The points are straight up penny a point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, paying a $90 annual fee to get $75 worth of travel credit isn't completely unreasonable in card world, but they're going to see if they can sort of move the needle on recurring spend, on regular spend.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I found interesting is that for every $15,000 you spend on the card, you get an upgrade, free upgrade.
What?
From one fare bundle to the next. So you can buy nice and sit in nicer. You can buy nicer and sit in nicest with the first class. Best I can tell, and this is, I asked explicitly and, we'll trust that their team did the necessary research before answering. The upgrade comes out of straight up revenue inventory. So last seat to sell in first class, you can grab it if you've got this little coupon. But a $15,000 worth of spend on this card seems strange. Because the points are generally limited to a penny a point.
Yeah.
At least for now, it's really hard for me, and double points on gas and co-brand and restaurants or something like that. Pretty standard stuff. Grocery and restaurant spend, not gas. And also no free check bag. So it's just, I look at it, I'm like, okay, so it's a 1% cash back card for the most part, but only if I want to use that cash on this one airline. Why wouldn't I just get a 1% cash back card, or even better, a higher paying card?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The only other thing it offers is free Wi-Fi, which is nice if you're on a nice fare. Nicer and nicest come with that by default.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. They did it. They had to do it. It's part of what it takes to be in the market these days, but it's not the best of anything by any stretch. Yeah.
Looking at their route map now, I'm kind of like, man, I really need to fly Provo to Hartford.
That said no one ever. I'm sure there's some people, Provo is close enough to Salt Lake. I get it.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Some of these routes, I'm just like, what is this?
Few of them are, more than two or three times a week. So there's that.
A Vero Beach to Hartford, I guess. I don't.
Yeah. That one, I believe. I understand. Like, that's snowbird stuff.
San Bernardino to Hartford. Should totally do that one. That one. I'm surprised you didn't do that one, honestly.
Me too. They actually are showing that as a nonstop?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And they do fly it as an... Oh, no, it stops in Phoenix.
Yeah, that's... Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, but they show it on their route map as a nonstop for $170.
No, the San Bernardino stuff is... interesting.
Yeah, I would agree.
That one they've moved around. I think that one was out of Provo before and they moved it down to Phoenix. But anyway, yeah, they've got an interesting route map. Where they fly, if they fly nonstop in your market, it's a comfortable ride. Now all the commercial services on 220s now, they'll all have Wi-Fi by the end of the year. Comfy ride, relatively decent reliability at this point. They had some trouble early on. Do it based on this was a decent fare on a nonstop flight, not because they have a credit card.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is, in the midst of all of these other things that they're launching, they've also launched a basic economy fare.
Oh, interesting.
And it's called No Flex or something like that, as opposed to Nice, Nicer, or Nicest. And what's interesting is that even with it calling it basic economy and whatever, you don't get a carry-on bag, only an underseat bag, personal item. And it does still have some flexibility, but the other three fare families will offer basically up until an hour prior to departure, you can basically get 100% credit for future use. This one, from 14 days out to 1 hour, it becomes 25%. And from 14 days to 60 days, it's only 50%. And outside of 60 days, it's 100%. So, not great, but not truly non-refundable, useless.
I mean, I thought they were just going to call it standing room only or something.
Yeah.
No. All right, let's move on. Japan, they have a new jet in the works, or a plan for a new jet? What's the
plan for a new jet? So, the space jet from Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, that was they got it off the ground. They even sort of started flying and then realized that was never going to happen. And so they stopped selling it. They killed that program a few years ago. Now there's some discussion that between the government and the government's going to put in some money and expect some of its, industrial partner, industrial companies, including MHI, to participate. They're going to try again and invest, a few billion dollars to try to make a next gen aircraft, possibly hydrogen powered, and do all of the research on not just aerodynamics, but also like the fuel systems and beyond just on the aircraft, the ground systems necessary to support that infrastructure and all those other things. So this is, you know, yay for having a government-driven investment in the future and what the next generation of stuff looks like. A lot of money potentially, and I really, 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 really hope that they take some benefits off of the stuff that they had to kill off.
Hmm. Do you think this goes anywhere?
I mean, it's a long-term program, so it's really, really hard to say.
Yeah.
At this point, like, betting on hydrogen power is already a bit of a stretch, but not that I don't think it'll happen, but it's going to take a lot still, I think, to get beyond concept and into sufficient, you know, is it going to be hydrogen powered fuel cells or hydrogen gas? Is it like, what are the things going to be? And there's a lot of very smart people working on a lot of these things. I'm sure that Japan's contribution will be beneficial in that context, but they're not on their own.
Yeah. Air Malta.
No more.
It doesn't exist. Maybe it's like
this is sort of like when
Eastern
when Sabena went under and was immediately replaced by Brussels Airlines, or Swiss Air International became Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they did and we talked about this a little in a prior episode, I'm pretty sure, but they basically have scaled back their operations dramatically. They went from many planes down to 8, revamped their route map and network, and they're going to try this time to actually make money doing it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good luck. Outspeed. Like,
in a lot of ways, this is basically because the European regulators don't let you just keep pumping money into a government-owned airline. So instead of doing that, they killed the old one, funded a new one, and had the old one take it over. And it's like, it's KM Malta Airlines now instead of Air Malta.
Mm-hmm.
And KM, if I remember correctly, is KM or KN is the IATA code for it. So,
do you think, I mean, Air Malta's kind of been it's been a mess, but it was also kind of a nice essential service out of Malta. I shouldn't say essential, but it was nice to have because they offered, back before COVID, a bunch of routes out of Malta that wouldn't have existed otherwise. That kind of travel is coming back. That's a positive, right? To have an airline locally based that's able to fly those routes.
Yeah. I mean, right. Whether it needs to be a local airline or not certainly is debatable.
Yeah. I mean, it could be
Ryanair.
Ryanair. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Who does fly a ton of service into Malta, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot. No, that's how it didn't work. There are a lot of options out there. I'm just looking. I crashed my deal. You know, trying to figure out sort of what some of the numbers are in terms of capacity. But Air Malta was very low relative to the overall level of services. Ryanair has more than twice as many flights this month than Air Malta does, and well more than double the number of seats.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's some flights, you know, Ryanair could easily, I could see them taking,
yeah, you know, and like good news, bad news, you've got Ryanair, but you know, they Ryanair is also much more fickle about, they don't care if it benefits your economy or not, they care if it benefits them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean it's kind of like KM Malta flies to Gatwick and Heathrow while Ryanair flies Luton and Stansted, so I guess you've got everything covered as far as,
yeah, but like, right, like if you know, if gate fees go up at Malta Airport.
Yeah.
Ryanair might cut its service. KM Malta Airlines is not. Right? Like, and they'll fight it and whatever. But at the end of the day, the local national airline exists to make sure that the country has its critical links to the outside world, especially for an island nation, that's a big deal. Whereas the other airlines doing it are, you know, a little jive-come-lately, like, whatever, I'm going to bring the people in or not. But, you know, only if it makes sense to fly here.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Love that Emirates has service there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I had some coworkers. It was funny. We used to have one of my old employers had a big office in Malta for EU purposes.
Yeah.
But most of our clients were in the Middle East. But they would use the jumping off point of Malta with Emirates. So interesting. Always fun.
Yeah.
I just figured, you know, they would, if the fees went up in Malta, Ryanair would like fly to like, I don't know, Catania or Palermo and call it Malta North or something.
For those who didn't quite follow, those are a very different island in a different country.
Yes. And then say there's a ferry involved or something.
Yeah.
Southwind Airlines, which is the Turkish leisure carrier, I think.
Yep.
They've been banned in Europe and by the UK by default, I guess. The UK's
so
kind of follow along, right?
Almost. So basically, it has been determined that they are essentially a Russian front in Turkey.
you don't say.
And so the European Union has basically said, yeah, that all we have an embargo against Russian operations here. We know that technically you're a Turkish company, but you're not Turkish enough. So no, you can't fly here. The UK bit, whether the UK actively decides to issue a ban or not, is kind of moot because they'd have to overfly Europe to get to the UK. And they can't do that because of this ban. So they don't get to do that. They don't get to fly to the UK either.
I mean, it's fitting. I think people, it's funny to me, like our listeners probably aren't aware of this, but like Southwind flies, there are some routes within Russia that Southwind was flying, wholly within Russia.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
You would catch them sometimes. I think it was like East Coast to West Coast, because I think they have some 77Ws that they were using. And I think they were filling in for some of the ones that were down for like Nordwind or Aeroflot.
Yeah.
So they would bring them in to fly the route because they didn't have a plane. So super interesting.
Yeah. So chartering or whatever. But
yeah. Wet leasing or dry. I don't know what the term is there, but yeah. And then speaking of the EU, they've really now kind of laid down facts, I guess, or, you know, put it in writing that they object to the Lufthansa ITA deal that has been talked about for a while now.
Yeah, and that's a not much of a surprise. It's if you read the release, what they basically say is this is part of the normal process where we identify the areas where we expect them to compromise and make proposals of what, you know, come back to us and say this is why it's not a big deal, that there's going to be limited competition on the routes we've identified or it's like that. So it's part of the process. It is a formal objection, and if the regulators aren't satisfied, it does scuttle the deal, but it's basically considered the opening salvo in negotiations more than the piss off docking. Depending on who you're thinking about. So yeah, good times.
Yeah, that's yeah. And then kind of some good news to end the show on. Happy news, I guess. We're recording this on April Fool's Day, and British Airways turns 50 today.
Yeah, it's today or yesterday. I can't quite tell which day was the first day of operations, but this was the day officially that BEA, British Europe Airlines, and BOAC, the British Overseas Airways Corporation, and I probably got both of those slightly wrong, but, you know,
should happen. Yeah, we'll forgive you.
Combined and rebranded and became BA. So interestingly, the company itself is not celebrating it really at all.
Which is, yeah, super interesting. Maybe everybody thought it was an April Fool's joke. I don't know. Like, they forgot when their company was founded. I don't know.
Maybe their IT systems couldn't handle it.
Oh, God. That was low blow.
Yeah. You like that.
But true, also.
yeah. They definitely had their share of problems, more than their share of problems with the IT world.
Yeah. So we got a bunch to talk about in the bonus show for our Patreon subscribers. We've got some UK citizens learning about passport rules again, apparently, when it comes to EU and Schengen. We've got Norse starting a new route starting in September. There's a website guaranteeing rain-free trips. We'll talk about that. And then some other things around the US and Europe. So for our Patreon subscribers, stick around to listen to that. And then kind of want to thank some new patrons. We've got Andrew R, Nikki S, and Eric W. Thanks for signing up to be Patreon subscribers. We appreciate it. And to our regular listeners on the regular show, thank you. And thank you for listening. And we're happy to take comments, questions, disagreements via Twitter, via email, whatever you'd like to do. Hit us up and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.